There are learning strategies that students could do independently now that I think digital tools increase access for. And so part of what teachers need to do is teach how to curate that, to teach how to do that effectively and efficiently. Because although students have access, I don't think they're very good at it. Right? So I think that that's where teachers are really going to help students organize their own learning. And it's going to be less about instructional strategies. It'll be about learning strategies. I see that as a change coming forward that we're going to embrace.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast.
Welcome to the Digital to Learn podcast. I'm Tiffany Snyder, and I'm back with my co-host, Brad Garner. Hey, Brad.
Hello.
So this is fun. We're welcoming back to the show, Marie Hubley-Alcock. Welcome back, Marie.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be here again.
And for our listeners who did not get a chance to listen to part one or just want to catch it again, you can listen in on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podbean, or Pandora. And catch some of the resources that go along with the episode on our website, www.digitaltolearn.com, with a numerical two in there. But for now, we are going to dive right back into our conversation with Marie. Let's get started.
Every school, every institution, organization is sitting on a ton of data, but we typically don't know how to access it, don't know how to integrate it. And so when it comes to making decisions, it's usually something like, I think this would be the best approach based on nothing. So how do school administrators respond when you give them CES links?
Right. So we talk about six types of data and we try to give professionals language to talk about data because it's a lack of that language that starts to make us overgeneralize. So we start saying, hey, can we talk about student achievement data? All right. So maybe that's standardized tests, but also in-house data. In-house evidence to substantiate or refute that. But that's still just one type of data. So any decision you're making based on some standardized test or some assessment, like a benchmark assessment, if you suddenly change curriculum, instruction, or assessment because of one type of data, you're in danger of making a very faulty decision. So caution, you need at least two to three types of data to justify the resources and the changes that you're going to be making. Because in schools, right, we make these knee-jerk responses. And that's one, so student achievement data. Two, perception data. Brad, what you just spoke about. I think this, or my opinion is that. Great. But let's survey the kids. What do they think about the curriculum? Or let's survey parents. Let's survey the community, right? So there's all this perception data that's valuable that we may not be collecting. And I, of course, am a very student-centered piece. So I go right after the kids first. I love when many schools let me train the students on how to write curriculum. So we have students writing curriculum for their next school year or their next future. Oh, kids, by the way, are great at writing curriculum. They get it so fast and they're so inspired to it. They don't even need grades to inspire them, right? They just need something worthy. Okay, so we add student achievement data, we add perception data, curriculum data, what you actually taught. You have environmental data, like was your school under construction during that year? Or how many hurricane days did you have off, right? Then you have research data, what's out there, what's working, what's not. And then student data, who are the kids? Number of parents on active military assignment, right? You really need to know who your community is before you start trying to think you know anything about what they need to learn or what they might have questions about. So having those six types of data, Brad, help administrators go, oh my gosh, are we even collecting those or how are we using those? Because we tend to chase easy data, right? What's the saying? Sometimes the things we can count are not worth counting. And some of the things we can't count are worth examining. And this going after the low-hanging fruit doesn't lead us to good decisions, in my opinion.
Exciting. That's exciting stuff.
Now, when you were sharing about the CES links, you talked a little bit about contemporary education and needs of contemporary education. So what do you mean when you use that term contemporary education, and how does that fit in with your concept of something we associate with you and introduced in your bio, which is bold moves?
Yeah, bold moves is one of the funniest stories of my career.
Perfect.
Right. So, oh man, what a great question, Tiffany. But let me unpack it a little bit, okay?
Yay.
Okay. So one thing about bold moves is that it was supposed to be a book about contemporary curriculum. That was my goal, okay. Right? Like, let's write a contemporary curriculum. Yay. And so we did. It was awesome. You could have laminated it. It was awesome. That was a joke. Okay. So
I like it.
We couldn't. It wasn't as effective, right, as you would have wanted it to be. So we were like, oh, to do a contemporary curriculum, you need contemporary pedagogy. So Heidi Hayes Jacobs and I are like, all right, contemporary pedagogy, go, go, go. But then what we learned was, I'm sorry, you can train teachers on contemporary pedagogy and give them a contemporary curriculum, and it's still not going to work the way you want it to, because things like scheduling, your schedule is curriculum destiny. Right? So what I can do in 40 minutes or 90 minutes or 120 minutes, I don't care. If you're doing an industrial model of mass production and interchangeable parts where you're grouping kids and you're trying to deliver something to the group, I don't care how much you're differentiating it. And if you have kids moving from group to group, there's no brain research that says 40 minutes is the perfect learning section of time for all disciplines, right? But for some, it is good. For some, it's not. So what happens here is we keep treating everything like mass production. Then we want the kids to be ready for the information age. And so what Heidi and I realized was, oh my gosh, we'd have to go after not only curriculum and pedagogy, but we'd have to go after the schedule, the physical spaces, the virtual spaces, how we're grouping kids, how we're grouping adults, the narrative, leadership, policies. And so we realized this book went from being about contemporary curriculum to being about the whole system. And we realized when we wrote it, we're like, oh, we just took on things like attaching education to property values. And we just took on the idea of attaching the idea of unions being about protecting teachers from administration to unions being a self-governing body. Like, you know how you have a legal board and you have a medical board, be an education board, and they should be evaluating teachers. And then the administration could be advocates for their teachers. You with me on this? We wrote about that and we're like, we're either getting blackballed or we're changing things. And so we wrote the book. And can I tell you, we threw away more chapters than actually got published. You with me on how big that book was? It was like birthing a child. It was this book. And Heidi and I, that's what changed our relationship from this mentor-mentee to deep colleague, taking this risk of calling a fish in our profession. And I will tell you that bold moves are not reckless. Bold moves are intentional. They can be very small, and that's still bold. But the idea here is to move away from the industrial design of education, which we are entrenched in, and to move more toward this human experience of learning, which humans are built to do. They thrive on descriptive feedback. It's individualized and personalized, and it's not mass production, right? It's this idea of being purposeful. Mm-hmm. And that's what prepares children for the future they're going to have, which Brad and Tiffany, you and I know, we can't predict. So to sit here in a position of arrogance and think, I will set up hoops and the children who jump through it get a meaningful A and the ones who don't get a C, right? Like, can we just throw that out and stop sorting children and move more toward this? Let's develop children and help families and communities equally, huge point for me. That is contemporary education, and that's what it needs to be.
Wow. We didn't even get charged with writing the book, and I feel like it's a wonderful, overwhelming charge and point of reflection. It just makes you stop for a second.
I'm beginning to believe that any question we're going to ask Marie, we're going to get the same kind of overwhelming, challenging, thought-provoking answers. I mean, she's amazing.
I know. There's a joke, Marie, amongst the Digital to Learn team, my colleagues, that when I feel overwhelmed or I leave a meeting inspired in a positive way, so much on my mind, I tend to do a very quick walk around the neighborhood, a power walk, if I may.
So you'll be walking around the neighborhood today?
I can see one in my near future, that is for sure. But it's good. It's good.
That's great stuff. So we have a real interest in the intersection of technology, teaching, and learning. So how do you see digital technology changing the way teachers teach and students learn?
That's such a fascinating question. I'm going to say wow right back at you, because the layers in that question could be like another book. You with me on this? But let's begin just with the title of the book, Bold Moves, had a subtitle. It was Designing Remarkable Learning Environments. And the digital tools that are available to us are a method of giving options. It's about options to impact a learning environment. One of my colleagues, Mike Fisher, he always says, he's like, no one goes into a tool store saying, oh, you know, I want this amazing drill, right? That's not how you get motivated to go buy a drill. You're building something and you need a hole. That's what motivates you to go buy a drill. So I feel the same way about digital tools. It's not like there's this one amazing digital tool that's going to make or break all of education. But because we need to teach students skills, or students need to learn skills, we're going to constantly be seeking out these very powerful digital tools in order to enhance that experience where they can make it better. Now, mind you, they don't always make it better, right? Socrates had a good thing going with inquiry and questioning, right? There's things that are classical that have always worked and will always work. And so I don't see digital tools replacing us. You should see me at the AI conferences where they're like, we're going to fix education. I'm like, oh, let's have this conversation, right? Right? You should see me. You think I'm sassy now. Watch what happens. But it's not about replacement or doing it better. But there certainly are tools that are worthy. There's classical elements, and then there's going to be these contemporary elements that involve adult learning. And so I think those are going to make remarkable learning environments. But the big change isn't so much how teachers are going to teach, although I think they're going to talk less. I think it is impacting more how students learn. So there are learning strategies. What is it? There's 16 ways the human brain learns, right? So there are learning strategies that students can do independently now that I think digital tools increase access for. And so part of what teachers need to do is teach how to curate that, to teach how to do that effectively and efficiently. Because although students have access, I don't think they're very good at it. Right. So I think that that's where teachers are really going to help students organize their own learning. And it's going to be less about instructional strategies. It'll be about learning strategies. I see that as a change coming forward that we're going to embrace.
I hope so.
You know, I mentioned before the podcast began today, just in getting to talk to you a little bit, that I have a 3-year-old daughter. And right now, if you ask her what she wants to be when she grows up, it is a teacher. She's not launching her professional career right now. I guess you could argue maybe she is. But what is the best advice that you would give to someone new to the field of education, beginning their career, based on what you've seen and what you believe you might see in the near future?
I love that question. And I love the idea of
it sounded like a learning omnivore, if I'm not mistaken.
Right? Yeah. I think that developing a learning network, avoiding isolation. I think a lot of educators today are isolated. I think this idea of mass production and we all have the same shape room and we're all with one group of kids, I think that's a very bad design. And so I would encourage your daughter to create her own learning network. Seriously, let's go with learning omnivores, right?
Yeah.
And curate that and nurture that and carry that with her as she goes into this career, because it's a profession. right? It's not a job. Mm-hmm. It's not something where she's going to learn what she needs to learn and be done. And so by embracing that idea and being very organized about it and distinguished in it, right? Pick who you want to learn from and curate that. I could see her having a wonderful, satisfying career. It's a huge part of my own and one I'm deeply grateful for.
Yeah.
So how did you get started on that path of walking up to someone who's a renowned expert and saying, hey, I want to partner with you? How did that get started for you?
I lied on my resume. So what happened was I was the director of this infant toddler through grade eight program that, but I was running kind of like an after school aspect of it. I was co-director or coordinator. And what happened was we had to pass something called NACE accreditation. And so to do that, you had to document what you were doing. So I did. I documented what we were doing at each group. And I called it curriculum mapping because that's what I was doing. Mind you, at the time, I had no idea there was an entire industry of curriculum mapping. I just made up this term. So then as a good 20-something year old, I was out there just practicing interviews. You know how you do that? Like, you don't really expect to leave your job, but you're just staying sharp with your interviews. And so I was at this school and they were interviewing me and they're like, well, we're really interested in this curriculum mapping. And so now picture me. I'm like, oh my gosh, like that was just a term.
Really?
Really? And they're like, do you use the Heidi Hayes-Jacobs method? And I was like, no. And they're like, well, we want you to come here to do curriculum mapping, but we want you to use the Heidi Hayes-Jacobs method. And I was like, okay, but I don't think you can afford me, which is exactly what you're supposed to say in an interview. And they're like, oh, we think we can. And so I ended up getting the job and I was supposed to do this curriculum mapping. And they sent me to a Heidi Hayes-Jacobs conference. And I'm sitting there. Now, mind you, you got to understand, this was one of the most beautiful conference things I've ever gone to. It was like this blue rug in a solarium of a stone building. And there's Heidi Hayes-Jacobs talking and raw brilliance, right? That you're like, what? And so I'm sitting there going, well, there's my hero. How do I get that job? And so I walked up to her and because I just didn't want that moment to get away from me. And I was like, what are you doing? Like, can I call you and show you what we're working on? She's like, oh yeah, sure. So I did. And I was sending her my work. And she's like, oh, you're doing great work. And then she's like, can I send other schools to you for advice? And I'm like, yeah, sure. So she kept sending other schools to get samples of my maps and samples of my work. And I saw her later at another conference. She's like, how much are you charging? Because I would take my personal days and go to these other schools and help the teachers. Oh, and yeah. She's like, well, how much are you charging for that? And I'm like, nothing. And she's like, no, Marie, you're supposed to charge for that. What are you doing? I didn't know. So she's like, okay. She's like, rewind. You're not supposed to just go and do that. So she sent me to this woman, Dr. Marianne Holt, to learn how to be a consultant. And that's what started it, right? Like, I was inspired to Heidi. And then Heidi started sending me to the people I needed to learn from. And that got me in the habit. And then I had no problem going up to anybody going, hey, teach me how you did that. Or how can I get better at this part? And I've learned that most people are super generous with their knowledge and just want to help. Because honestly, when people asked me for help, I gave up my personal days and just went to their schools to help. We're all in it for the kids. We're all in it for a better system. So I rely on that.
What a great lesson in networking.
Wow. I know. And our listeners may be tired of hearing this, but Brad and I still to this day are blown away that people say yes to us in the podcast. And yet the podcast has featured our favorite people in digital teaching and learning.
Absolutely.
And every time there's wonderful, we're going to learn from them. And no one even flinches like, well, I'm not sure if I'll do it. They want to do it and they want to share what they're passionate about. So thank you for being open and willing to say yes when we came knocking on your door.
Oh, I was honored. I think what you're doing is fantastic. And I think the conversation is important. And I think that the general public has to be a part of this narrative and be involved in the issues and questions that we have about learning and education. So I'll just share with you on the other side, all the people that you're going up to and asking, when you, Brad and Tiffany, come forward, it's like, yes, someone's bringing that conversation out there. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, good.
I do have one regret today about this podcast, and that is that our viewers will get to hear your voice and hear your enthusiasm. But what they're missing, and we got to see today, are your facial expressions, your arms and hands moving as you describe your answers to these questions, the passion you bring to what you talk about. It's exhilarating.
Marie is fun. She needs featured on a platform, at a conference, like for real.
Absolutely.
You know, when you hear somebody or you know they're an author of a book and you think, can they speak? Would it be okay? Do they have the personality to go with the... She does.
Absolutely. So
that's our own plug.
Aw, thank you. Aw. See, now I'm going to be sad that we only have this short time.
I know.
So if you could think of anything else to talk to me about, please.
We will be back for another dose of Marie Alcott. I guarantee it.
Yeah. And we may or may not show up at one of your networking meetings at a conference somewhere.
The Learning Omnivores, you're going to get an email. It's a pretty cool one. It's like top secret email.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate you, Brad and Tiffany, for participating in this and including me. Thank you.
Thanks everyone for listening to Digital to Learn. You can access additional resources on our website, www.digitaltolearn.com, and that's with a numerical 2. Until next time, thank you.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are 3 things we ask you to do. 1, come back and join us again. 2, tell your friends about us. And 3, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
It's a digital world.
Always keep learning.